all the way across the island like a belt, concluding at the ocean on the opposite side of town. The street along the ocean was appropriately named Ocean Drive, and it paralleled the boardwalk for several miles, separating town from beach. Whoever had been charged with naming the streets had been fairly unimaginative. Personally, I appreciated that fact. It made giving directions much simpler. The same white cat I had seen at the beach sat in an alleyway between two shops, watching me and rotating one notched ear as if she could hear something I couldn't. Aunt Clara's story of my allegedly distant relative, Magnolia Bain, and her married lover came to mind. The spirit of one of the women is said to wander the town as a weathered old cat. Any chance you're inhabited by the spirit of a heartbroken mistress? I asked. The cat flicked its tail. That seems like a yes to me, I said. So I'm going to call you Maggie, and we'll be friends. How does that sound? Maggie turned and walked away. See you soon, I called to her retreating frame. I cracked the top off a disposable cup and sucked down a tea sample, then gathered my wild sticky hair into a ponytail and piled it on top of my sweaty head. Even with the melted ice watering it down, Grandma's sweet tea was delicious. The sounds of hammering and power tools filtered into my consciousness as I moved up Middletown Street toward the bay. A crew of construction workers had torn the roof off a large waterfront home and were working to build a new one under the blazing sun. If they wouldn't take my free tea, I was in worse trouble than I'd realized. I jogged across Bayview with my wagon, careful not to spill the goods. The men in hard hats and work belts were quick to notice my approach. I waved. Sweet tea? The answer was a resounding yes. The men swarmed me. Some tried to pay me. I gave the money back, along with my business card and directions to my cafe. Turns out the crew wasn't from Charm, so they didn't read the local gossip blog. They also didn't know Mr. Payne or have a clue that he'd died suspiciously. Best of all, they expected to work 6 days a week through the summer, and it was only late April. Maybe I'd be able to pay my mortgage next month after all. Fresh out of supplies and business cards, I dragged my empty wagon back down Middletown Street through town. The streets had begun to fill since my first pass, and a light was on inside Sam's office. I parked the wagon and went inside. Sam? I approached the reception desk and tapped the little silver bell. Sam Smart? The office was business bland. I wrinkled my nose against the stink of new carpet and fresh paint. A section of blue faux leather seats broke up the tan carpet and cream walls, and a television in the corner played the company's commercial on a loop. Sam! I tried the bell again. Sam scuttled into view from somewhere in back. His cheeks were flushed and his eyes were wide.
Oh, hello, Everly.
He broke my name into three separate syllables and spoke it loudly. Hi, I glanced around. Everything okay? He drove a handkerchief over his dewy forehead and met me on my side of the counter.
Yes, fine. How are you? What brings you in? Ready to move so soon?
He laughed awkwardly. No, I've been thinking about what happened to Mr. Payne, and I hoped you might be willing to tell me what was going on between the two of you that day at my shop. It was obvious that you weren't happy with one another. Sam tugged his ear and crossed his arms. His foot tapped nervously.
I don't know what you mean. Payne and I were fine. You were the one who argued with him. What was that about exactly?
I made a face as Sam picked lint off his rumpled dress shirt and straightened his tie. You know what it was about. He wanted an ingredients list, and I wouldn't give it to him. We said as much while we were fussing. Everyone heard it, and you were sitting right there. I want to know what the two of you were up in arms about. He settled into an overly casual stance, one hip against the desk, hands in pockets.
I don't know what you mean.
I cocked my head and tried not to call out, liar, liar, pants on fire. Fine, let me jar your memory. First, you were trading dirty looks and thinly veiled accusations with him.
Then he started in on me and you interrupted him. You said, I lifted my fingers in air quotes, I know what your problem is and it's not her. Sam's fake orange tan paled. So I ask you, what was Payne's problem? Sam pulled his hands from his pockets, bringing them to the back of his neck.
I was just trying to rile him up, push his buttons.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe because he gave everyone else such a hard time. But I didn't hurt him.
Okay, I drawled. The idea that Sam had hurt him hadn't occurred to me before that moment. It was still too unreal to think anyone on our island would kill another human being. But I couldn't help wondering why Sam had made such a declaration when I hadn't even asked. Did he have a reason to announce his innocence in Payne's death? A reason like guilt?
I stepped a little closer to the door. What if I'd cluelessly waltzed into an office devoid of witnesses and confronted a murderer?
I believe you, I gushed, suddenly unsure that was completely true. Do you have any idea who might have? Because the new detective is looking at me, and I'd like to make some secondary options available.
Sam's eyes slid hard to the right before he pulled them back to my face.
Have you taken a look at Payne's gold-digging ex-wife, Lucinda?
No.
She's a class A nightmare. Always on the take. I wouldn't put anything past her.
Two cranky people in one marriage probably explains the divorce, I murmured.
Sam mopped his forehead again.
I don't know what else to tell you, but I'm in the middle of something, so...
Sure. I moved toward the front door, thankful for an exit cue and already determined to meet Payne's ex-wife. One more thing, I said, realizing I had no idea who she was. Does Lucinda live in town?
No, but she's got a gaudy bauble store in Duck.
Thank you, I said. Come back for tea sometime. Don't be a stranger. He lifted a hand in goodbye, but the gesture felt more like, get out. I dragged my wagon home with a skip in my step. I'd found a construction crew to woo with my tea, and I'd gotten a lead on my investigation. Mr. Payne's pain-in-the-behind ex-wife. Not too bad for a lady with no idea what she was doing.
Chapter 6. I dialed the police station from the boardwalk. Sam's strange behavior had given me the willies, and I couldn't stop thinking about what had happened on the boardwalk the night before. Much as I hated to relive it, Aunt Clara was right. The people should know there had been another attack by the marsh. I put my pride aside and waited for the call to connect. Yes, being swatted paddle-style with an old oar was humiliating, but I wanted to know who had hit me and why. The cops couldn't find my assailant if I didn't report the crime. When an officer finally answered, I unloaded every detail I could recall and was thrilled to learn they would accept a verbal report, though the officer told me I should make a trip to the station at my convenience and sign the official document. Peace washed over me as we disconnected. Now the truth was out there, and I wouldn't have to think about it anymore. My shoulders sagged in relief when my home came into view a few minutes later. I parked my wagon at the bottom of the steps and tucked the stack of empty trays beneath one bent arm. With any luck, Aunt Clara's group of faux historians enjoyed their tea and ghost story enough to spread the word and come back with friends. Then again, if the cafe failed, I could always open my home as a haunted house and charge for tours. One way or another, I needed an income to afford the enormous place. Currently, every stick of furniture I owned could fit into any one of the massive rooms, but I'd chosen to spread the pieces throughout the second floor as the layout dictated. A couch here, a table there. I leaned against the handrail to enjoy the moment, and it swayed against my weight.
Well, that wasn't good.
I couldn't have folks falling off my porch on the way in for tea. I stepped back onto solid ground and gave the rail a shake to test the integrity. Weathered paint stuck to my palms, along with a handful of rotted wood flakes and dirt. Jeez, I kicked the base of the railing lightly with my toe, and the bottom support bumped loose, revealing a rusted nail and oversized hole where the wood had aged to the opposite of perfection. Good grief! I forced the beam back into place and sat on the bottom step, settling the empty trays on my lap. The sound of footfalls drew my attention to the boardwalk. Detective Hayes walked toward me, his lips puckered in a whistle.
That handrail is in bad shape.
No kidding, I murmured, stretching my hot, jean-clad legs into the sun. I was having such a good day, too. He dropped onto the step beside me. His knees poked up in front of him and his arms hung loosely across them, leaving big tan hands to dangle over his feet. Authority oozed from him in a near-tangible aura. I leaned away so I could squint up at his face. What do you want? Not tea, I suppose. He shrugged.
I could use some information.
I made a face. What? He flicked his wrist toward the length of crime scene tape, fluttering in the breeze 20 yards away.
I got a call this morning from a man who says he heard a woman scream out here last night, just after dark. Didn't call till this morning, because by the time he got over to where he thought the sound had come from, there was no one there. Woke up feeling like he still ought to say something, so he did.
I wrenched upright. Who?
A night fisherman. He was down by the public bathrooms. I was just out this way talking to him when I got a call from the station.
My cheeks flushed. I'd barely hung up the phone, and Detective Hayes already knew I had filed a report. You're here looking into that? I asked.
Yep.
My tummy grumbled. You might as well come inside. I had a feeling this wouldn't be a short conversation, and I was starving. Detective Hayes levered himself off the step and went to roll a big rock against the base of the broken handrail post.
I wasn't kidding about fixing that. It's a safety violation.
Fine, I'll fix it today. He followed me onto the porch, still eyeballing the busted rail.
You'll need new wood and hardware. You can't just go pounding the same rusted nail into a different place on an already decrepit board and call it fixed.
I have wood, I said, unlocking the door and stepping inside. I flipped the sign to open. I have nails. I have all sorts of building supplies left behind by the previous owner. I guess he had big plans for renovations, but changed his mind. My thoughts drifted to Aunt Clara's strange story from this morning, but I pushed that nonsense away. I flipped the lights on and the cafe lit up with a warm glow. Make yourself comfortable. Detective Hayes took a seat at the counter, and I poured two glasses of sweet tea and set one in front of him. Do you like tomato, basil, and goat cheese salad?
Got any hamburgers?
No. I perused my refrigerator for inspiration and decided panini seemed like former U.S. Marshal turned small-town detective food. I filled my workspace with ingredients and plugged in my panini press. What do you usually eat for lunch?
Whatever it was, mine would be better. Antacids.
Yep, definitely better. I cut two thick slices of bread so soft I could use them for pillows, then stacked one piece with thinly cut apples and smoked ham. I topped that with a stubbornly sticky slice of brie and smothered it all in my homemade honey mustard. There. I put the sandwich into my heated press and popped a slice of apple into my mouth. Detective Hayes folded his hands on the counter, watching.
You really enjoy that.
Eating? I gave myself a lighthearted glance. Obviously. He let his gaze drift over my figure with a strange, pained expression.
Agree to disagree.
The press dinged and I jumped to attention, plating sandwich halves and scooping tomato, basil, and goat cheese salad onto mismatched dinnerware from my family's estate. The plates had been passed down like everything else the Swans had, including tall tales, legends, and recipes. Here you are. I took the stool beside him at the counter and dug in immediately. Best to keep my mouth busy before I put my foot in it. He sighed into his first bite, eyes briefly rolling back. My heart fluttered.
If I could create and serve food that made folks look like that every day, I'd exist in a perpetual state of bliss. Good?
Unreal.
He took another bite, and another. I smiled through half my sandwich and most of my salad before the button on my jeans protested and my fitness band beeped, "Be more active." I pinched the acknowledgement button until my fingers hurt. Detective Hayes wiped his mouth on a napkin.
Now, are you ready to talk about what happened last night?
I sipped my tea and searched his face. He wouldn't be here if my little marsh mishap wasn't a big deal.
I already have the basics from the report you called in. To someone else.
He ground out the last three words as if I'd somehow offended him. I inhaled deeply to settle my nerves, then blew the details out all over again. The crime scene tape was broken when I came back from my walk. I stopped to tie it back together, and I saw something in the weeds. When I sneaked down there for a better look, someone whacked me with an old oar, and I wound up face down in the yuck. Detective Hayes dropped his napkin on the counter and frowned at me.
Why didn't you call the station immediately? There might have been a patrolman in the area. Someone might have seen something.
There was no one. Just a couple of teenage boys in the distance, way down by the surf.
Can you identify them? Maybe they saw more than you think.
No. My shoulders slumped. They were barely more than silhouettes against the ocean. He pressed his lips into a thin white line.
You still should have let someone know. You should have let me know. We are in the middle of a murder investigation.
I bristled. I knew he meant well, but I didn't like being scolded. I was afraid, but I wasn't hurt, and I had no proof of the attack. Except the paddle, but how could I prove I'd been hit with it? I didn't even see who did it, and it was humiliating. He didn't look convinced.
Well, what was in the weeds that got you over there to start with?
I don't know. It was gone when I climbed back onto the boardwalk. I kept the busted boat oar, but I'm not sure what good it'll do. Detective Hayes swore under his breath.
It was the weapon used in your attack. Where is it?
I left him alone in the cafe and went to retrieve the dumb oar. I hated carrying it, hated touching it. It looked even worse for wear in the light of day. I huffed back into his view and thrust the paddle at him. Here.
Thanks.
His grouchy expression turned sour at the sight of it. He took the thing from my hands and gave it a thorough once-over.
Well, I guess your story explains why my crime scene looks as if a swamp monster crawled through it.
I frowned.
Anything else you want to tell me?
He asked, an edge of a dare in his tone. Yeah, I blurted. I don't like being referred to as a swamp monster. And you should know that Mr. Payne has an opportunistic ex-wife who might have had a reason to cause him trouble. If not, then she might know who did. Maybe you ought to talk to her. The detective's mouth formed a little O before he snapped it closed and clenched his square jaw.
And where'd you hear that?
I crossed my arms and kept my mouth clamped shut.
Talk.
I raised my eyebrows.
Don't make me threaten you with an obstruction charge.
Obstruction, I huffed. At least I'm out there asking people questions rather than focusing on one innocent bystander, trying to find out what really happened. That's called investigating.
It's called obstruction. Now, who were you talking to?
I pressed my lips together. Whatever I told him was likely to make him madder, and I was still unsure why he was mad to start with. I was helping. Detective Hayes shook his head at me, as if he was the one utterly exasperated.
I know you think you're being useful, but what you're actually doing is undermining my investigation, and I can't have that.
I slid off my stool and onto tired feet. He didn't want to hear my ideas, and I couldn't just wait around for him to get started actually looking for who might have killed Mr. Payne. That put us in a predicament. What do you expect me to do? I asked. Because frankly, it feels as if your investigation is moving slower than molasses, and it's still pointed alarmingly in my direction. I can't sit by and do nothing while my reputation is ruined, while my business is buried by rumors and lies. I've poured every ounce of my life savings and inheritance into this place. My determined tone turned slowly into a whine and made me want to cringe. Moving back to Charm was supposed to have been a fresh start for me, a chance to heal my broken heart, a do-over. But without the cafe, I couldn't afford to stay, at least not in this house. I have to do something. You would too if you were in my shoes. He climbed off his stool and lifted his empty plate. After a brief staring contest, he carried the dirty dinnerware to my sink behind the counter and ran water over it.
You think I'm being mean, but I'm telling you what's right. This is what I do, and I'm good at it. I don't need any help, and I don't want you putting yourself in harm's way. That's just more paperwork for me.
Stop that. I beetled around to his side and shooed him out of the way. Get! He sucked his teeth but retreated.
Who all did you talk to today?
I stuck our plates in the dishwasher and snapped the door shut. Just Sam. He's a real estate agent.
I know who Sam is, Detective Hayes grumped. He's the one who pointed you in Lucinda's direction.
Yeah. How do you know Sam already? Was he your agent? He tapped a smug finger against the badge on his hip.
This ain't my first rodeo, Swan.
The word rodeo twisted like a corkscrew in my belly, reminding me of the cowboy who'd recently broken my heart. Why'd you say that?
What?
I marched toward him and he retreated. The rodeo thing. Why'd you say it? An uncomfortable laugh changed his grouchy face.
It's a saying. People say it.
You meant something by it. He shook his head.
What I meant was for you to stay out of my investigation. That's all, and nothing more. I won't hesitate to haul you in if I have to. Better to have you in jail than out there getting yourself killed.
Killed? I squeaked. Was that meant to scare me, or is it an actual possibility? I trailed him to the doorway. What kind of maniac are we dealing with here? The detective walked right out the door, toting the oar.
Thank you for lunch,
he called over one shoulder.
And the evidence.
I stared, fuming as he strode away, wishing I'd had the chance to use that big paddle on him. I spent the afternoon familiarizing myself with power tools. I replaced the handrail and all the questionable boards on the front steps with sturdy new pieces. Then I sanded everything, nice and smooth. A fresh coat of white paint would pull it all together. But that was a job for tomorrow. I gripped the now unshakable handrail, proud of my work. So what if it had taken me 4 hours? The next time, it would only take 2. I wiped the sweat from my brow with the back of one arm and envisioned something different awaiting my many new and prospective customers. Like a pint-sized chalkboard outside the front door, listing the daily specials or just welcoming folks inside. And a big vase of my aunt's wildflowers with their lode lightning scent charming guests. I could line the outside decks and railings in twinkle lights like Sandy had done at his seaside sweet shack, so people would see my cafe from the beach. My clifftop location would make it impossible to miss after dark. A bevy of new ideas danced through my mind, buoyed by hope. Maybe it was time for that grand opening after all. I put my tools away and headed onto the beach to watch the sunset across the island. Sunrises over the Atlantic were magnificent, but there was something to be said for the arrival of twilight. Street lamps and house lights snapped on, illuminating my hometown. The first smattering of stars peeked their faces into view, and soon our local herd of wild colonial Spanish mustangs would wander out for their evening run through the surf. I had always loved the horses. I shuffled along the darkening beach, through thick grasses and around tiny inlets, until I found the perfect spot to wait for a glimpse of the mustangs. I kicked off my shoes and climbed onto a giant hunk of driftwood. Our town wasn't the only one in the string of narrow North Carolina islands to have wild horses, but ours were indisputably the best, because they were truly free.
Charm wasn't overrun with big money companies driving air-conditioned caravans of tourists onto the beaches for an intrusive look at the horses' lives. The people in Charm left our horses alone, aside from a handful of scientists who observed from a cautious distance and reported their findings for education. For most Charmers, the horses were just another component of our town's robust wildlife, not a spectacle to be exploited. I, on the other hand, was obsessed. Always had been, and I didn't care if I was usually alone in the fixation. I'd spent years of my adolescence seated among the dunes, waiting for the Mustangs to appear. Once I'd learned their patterns, I'd returned every night and waited for them to arrive. I'd bided my time, moved one step closer each night, using a heavy chunk of driftwood as my seat and placeholder, until eventually, the horses became comfortable enough to ignore me at about 30 yards. I hadn't expected more, and I'd stopped creeping closer at that point. To my sheer delight, they had started moving closer to me, freely using the space all around me so long as I stayed still and quiet. We'd had a companionable relationship until I left for culinary school. Now, I wasn't even sure where to look for them. I hugged my knees to my chest and rested my chin on them. The gentle hush of the sea and the dimming light coaxed piles of painful emotion to the surface, and heartbreak crawled over me. This was how I'd met Wyatt, my ex-boyfriend. He was a college student, an aspiring cowboy who'd come to Charm to study the horses, heal from a recent bronco riding injury, and save money for his next rodeo. I'd left town with him 3 months later. Stupid. There was no way to know if Detective Hayes had meant anything by his rodeo comment, but it had felt pointed and painful at the time. Most of my thoughts having to do with Wyatt still were. I'd loved him with every ounce of my soul and every fiber of my being. It had been the heart-crushing brand of first love that some people never got over. Some days, I had literally ached from it. I like to tell people that I'd left Charm for college, but the truth was I'd left for Wyatt. I'd studied in Kentucky instead of New York for him, staying away from Charm much longer than I'd ever intended, chasing my cowboy across the country. I'd remained by his side until the very end, when a devastating injury and a stint in traction removed him from the show, possibly forever. I'd given up everything to follow Wyatt's dreams, but he couldn't ride, and I only had 1 year of culinary school left, so I'd asked him to follow me back to Kentucky while he healed. He said no. I blinked against the waning sun as a predictable round of tears fell. In the distance, a line of Mustangs filed cautiously onto the sand and watched me cry. Chapter 7. I woke with a punch of adrenaline the next morning. Coming back to Charm was supposed to be my new start, a chance to follow my dreams, live my life, and I was going to do it. I was going to make my business a success, fix up the incredible house I had the unbelievable fortune to own, and prove to this town and Detective Hayes that I wasn't a killer. At 6 o'clock, I cocooned myself in a blanket and carried my laptop onto the deck to watch the sunrise. By 8, I'd finished a kettle's worth of tea and bookmarked a dozen websites with tips for inexpensive but clever ideas to make my grand opening a success. I also bought a book on public relations. Given the recent murder and poisoning insinuations thrown my way, I figured it couldn't hurt to memorize and live by it. First order of business? Win back the affection of residents of my sweet town. If the year-rounders loved sun, sand, and tea, they'd eat here and spread the word about my cafe when tourists asked for recommendations for a good glass of sweet tea or a place for lunch. According to my research, word of mouth was the cheapest and most effective marketing tool, so I needed to get the local tongues wagging, in a good way. My printer rocked to life in the next room, and I ran to evaluate my efforts. I'd mocked up 5x7 flyers to announce my big party. The images fit side by side, 2 per page, saving me money, ink, and paper. Plus, they were the perfect size for customers to put up on their refrigerators at home. I made a mental note to order cheap magnets with my logo and contact information. I could offer carryout for people who wanted to call and order in advance. I snagged the next paper coughed out by the aged machine and lifted it into the air. Tiny yellow suns created the perfect border to frame my announcement. A cartoon glass of sweet tea sat in a little hill of clip art sand beside the text. You're invited to the grand opening of Sun, Sand, and Tea. Sample the selection. Enjoy the view. Perfect! I cut the papers down the middle into two thick stacks of half-sheet flyers, then headed for the door. If my efforts paid off, I'd be making mortgage payments in no time. I bounced down the front steps and across the soft grass to the old carriage house, a storage space that most folks would use as a garage. My wagon was parked in the center, handle up, ready to roll. Rise and shine, I told the wagon. We've got work to do, baby. Once I got my life together, I would need a vehicle. A bike like my great aunt's rode was all I needed for summer travel and charm, and a golf cart would be perfect for winter. I couldn't be expected to walk my supplies home in a wagon when it was 30 degrees outside. Getting a car wasn't even an option. Cars were too expensive, from the initial cost to the insurance and upkeep. Forget it. I'd never needed a car before, and I doubted that I ever would. I'd walked everywhere on campus while I was away at school, and rode in Wyatt's truck from rodeo to rodeo. I'd never gotten my driver's license either, though I'd acquired a learner's permit in a few different states in case I needed to drive Wyatt to the hospital after his shows. We'd never stayed anywhere long enough to justify the time and effort to get an actual license. Besides, a bicycle or golf cart would let me enjoy my beautiful town far better than any car. The sunshine and ocean breeze worked in tandem to lure me back to the beach as I headed toward town along the boardwalk. A family with brightly colored blankets, bags, and buckets had claimed a spot near the water, a little girl sitting atop her dad's shoulders, controlling the string of a frog kite soaring proudly in the cloudless blue sky. The mom patted sand cakes with a shirtless toddler and a red sun hat. They were making memories that would last a lifetime. That was what I wanted to do with my cafe. I wanted people to come and make memories. I needed to think more carefully about how I could do that. I'd realized this morning that I hadn't given any thought to a business plan before opening my doors, naively running on the idea that if you build it, they will come. And some did, but not enough of them. And maybe the setback I was experiencing now could actually help me do a better job in the long run than I would have without it. I stepped onto Main Street with purpose. This time, I'd paired my Sun, Sand, and T-shirt with a long gauzy skirt and flip-flops. I'd painstakingly piled all 50 pounds of my dark curls into a whimsical and effortless-looking bun, then secured it with a tray of bobby pins and hairsprayed the creation to within an inch of its life. All in the name of looking deceitfully carefree. First stop, the community bulletin board on the square. I pinned one of my flyers to each corner, then walked methodically up and down the grid of business streets at the center of town, leaving copies in windows and near cash registers when possible. If anyone was brave enough to make eye contact, I handed them a copy directly and invited them personally to attend. If that didn't scare them off, I asked whether they knew anything about Mr. Payne. A teen couple in beach gear said I should ask the gossip blogger.
Because that dude knows everything.
Unfortunately, neither kid knew who ran the blog. A man reading the paper said Payne was a pain, which I already knew. And a lady wearing yoga gear and Birkenstocks told me his death was probably karma, then offered to clear my aura. Charm had either gotten stranger while I was away, or I'd simply never paid enough attention before. About 30 minutes later, a suspicious number of folks started avoiding my eyes and staring down at their cell phones. The town blogger must have gotten wind I was out harassing the people again and updated his or her post. I kept my chin up and my smile on as I entered Molly's Market for my grand opening decor needs.
Hey, Everly,
Mr. Waters called from the register. 50 years of chain smoking had whittled his voice into a windy rasp. Hello. I stopped at the counter with a flyer.
It's so good to see you. How's Molly?
Mr. Waters had named the store after his daughter, my former babysitter.
She's good. Four kids now.
He pulled a framed family photo from behind him.
Nice. What a beautiful family.
I pushed away any thoughts of Wyatt and the adorable kids we would have made together.
What can I do for you today?
He asked. A couple of things, actually. I showed him a flyer. I'm hosting a grand opening and need to pick up a few things. He put on his glasses and smiled at my handiwork.
Will you be at the street party this weekend?
I'd nearly forgotten about the annual street party. It was Charm's last quiet hurrah before tourists made their way across the bridge for the summer. We didn't get nearly as much traffic as other nearby favorites like Corolla and Nag's Head, but there were enough rental homes in town to change Charm's quaint dynamic from May through September. In a way, the street fair also kicked off the money-making months for many hometown businesses. Mr. Payne had hated the influx of tourists, but for many people, the money they made each summer was enough to keep their lives afloat the rest of the year, and everything else was just a bonus.
I could only imagine. I wouldn't miss it. Do you mind if I leave a couple extra flyers on the counter?
He took a generous stack and winked.
Absolutely not. And you can count on the missus and me to be at your party. Now, what else can I do for you?
I checked for listening ears, leaning against the counter.
Do you know if Mr. Payne had anything unusual going on recently? Like an abnormally big fight with someone?
Or an ongoing beef that could have made the other party homicidal from sheer frustration? Mr. Waters rubbed his chin.
Not that I've heard, and I hear a lot. Only market in town and all.
That was exactly why I had asked.
Okay, I said. How about his ex-wife Lucinda? Can you tell me anything about her?
I didn't know Lucinda well, but I remember her. She always seemed a little too fancy for Charm, so I wasn't shocked when she left Benedict. He was Charm through and through.
Were they getting along lately?
Mr. Waters rubbed his eyes beneath his glasses.
I suppose. They've been divorced a few years now. Not much to argue about anymore. What makes you ask?
I gave him a sad smile. I'm just trying to figure out who could have hurt him that night. The ex-wife is probably a stretch, but if they were still in touch, she might know if there was something big going on with him. He smiled brightly, apparently pleased with my quest.
I've always liked a go-getter. Tell you what, I'll keep my ears open and let you know if I hear anything.
Deal.
If only everyone in town were so quick to believe I was innocent and offer their help. I filled my wagon with plates, cups, and bowls that looked fancier than they were, then went to get some toothpicks for hors d'oeuvres and sandwiches. I found some foam boards for displaying photos and added them to my growing pile.
What's this?
A thick Russian accent turned me on my heels.
Hannah!
I crushed her in my arms. We rocked side to side in our embrace, stiff-legged and jubilant, like a pair of eighth graders during their first slow dance. She stepped away first, eyeballing my wagon.
What's this?
She repeated, stealing a flyer from the stack I was carrying.
You're going to have a party without me?
Of course not, I laughed. I plan to come see you tomorrow and invite you myself.
Hannah was closer to my age than my great aunts, but the three of them ran in the same circles. Holistic, tree-hugging, naturalist circles. Today, she wore a silk headband with a Patsy Cline t-shirt and cut-off jeans. Her petite build and girlish figure was deceiving. I'd seen her carry feed sacks I wouldn't have been able to budge with a dolly.
What do you need?
She asked. I don't know yet. I'm going to put together the menu tonight, then come to your place with a list of ingredients. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
She tugged the ends of her dark pixie cut. I could practically see the delight in her eyes at the idea of getting to provide fresh goodies for the party. She looked me up and down.
So? What's new with you? Besides, you know.
She wiggled her phone, having clearly gotten all the town charmer details about my poisonous ways.
Oh, not much. Just trying to solve a murder and launch an iced tea shop.
She nodded, as if this was a normal set of goals.
Did you know Mr. Payne? I asked.
Yes.
He didn't like me selling produce from my home. He said to go to the farmer's market. I said, I am a farmer's market. End of story.
I gave her a sympathetic smile before hugging her goodbye and promised to get my produce ordered to her as soon as I could. A few minutes later, my wagon was 4 shopping bags heavier and my wallet was $63 lighter. But I had gobs of disposable cups and plates for my party, and I'd chosen the beachiest of decorations to up my shop's already great look. Shells, starfish, sand dollars, and buckets. It would be a party no charmer would soon forget. Maggie, the scruffy white cat, tailed me back down Middletown to the boardwalk, trotting stealthily alongside me in the tall grasses.
I can see you, I said, turning to look at her. It's okay to like me. I'm a nice lady.
Maggie froze. I smiled.
You're white and you're trying to hide in the very green grass. Come on out here, I urged.
She didn't budge a muscle. I squatted and clucked my tongue, wiggling my fingers as if I had something in my hand she might want to see. She didn't.
Fine.
I dropped my hand and straightened to my feet. I'd wear her down eventually. She was already interested, so I had that going for me. Amelia was peering into one of her little libraries when I lifted my eyes back to the boardwalk. She brushed sand from the top and inside shelves, then lifted books from a pile stacked on the ground into the tiny structure. When she glanced up at me, I was struck by the sadness in her eyes. She looked as if someone had stolen her puppy.
Hey,
I let my wagon roll to a stop.
What's the matter?
Oh, you know, everything. She wound a length of stick-straight hair behind one ear. The rest hung loose in a chin-length bob.
How much time do you have?
I smiled. Are you going my way? Maybe I can keep you company.
That sounds really nice.
She stared along the boardwalk toward my home and her next little library.
My ex-husband is a total creep, and he lives in town, and he remarried last weekend. They're home from their honeymoon now. You know where they went? Hawaii. You know where he took me? The B&B on Bay Street.
You were 18, I said, rubbing her back as we began to walk. Do you still love him? I couldn't even think of Amelia's ex-husband's name. They'd had a whirlwind romance our senior year, then married that summer. I remembered a bonfire on the beach and some underage drinking, but that was all. I was home before curfew, playing cards with Aunt Fran until dawn, marveling over how two people my age had agreed to such a commitment when I'd had trouble committing to a summer lifeguarding job.
I don't love him anymore, Amelia said. The divorce is just a point of failure that I'll always have to live with, like a black mark on my record or something. Being young and stupid is awful. His new wife will always think of me as the loser who couldn't keep him.
You don't want him.
Not the point, she growled.
I pulled my hand back so I wouldn't lose it.
Sorry. It's fine. I think I'm just extra irritable because someone keeps filling all my little libraries with sand at night. People open the doors to see what's available and get 5 gallons of sand dumped all over them. It's wrecking some of the books. Makes me so mad.
I had no idea who'd want to vandalize a place to get free books, but her story about her ex-husband reminded me of my quest.
Did you know Mr. Payne's ex-wife?
Amelia raised her brow. Her pale blonde hair nearly matched her fair skin.
No. Why?
You think she's doing this to my books?
What?
I looked at her sand-dusted sundress.
No, not at all. I spoke with Sam Smart yesterday about Mr. Payne, and Sam said Mr. Payne's ex-wife was a real pill, that maybe she had reason to hurt him, or she might be able to tell us who did.
Oh, Amelia's narrow lips pulled low into a frown. Well, have you talked to her?
Not yet.
I don't know her or where she lives. I still need to look her up. Sam said she has a jewelry store in Duck.
Amelia's downturned mouth flipped up.
I love Duck. We should take a road trip as soon as possible. We can use my car.
I smiled.
Yeah? How about tomorrow? We can leave early and spend the day.
And shop?
She clutched her hands to her chest.
Sure.
Yes, please.
I wasn't sure I had the funds for shopping, but I definitely wanted to take a girlfriend's road trip and question my newest lead in Mr. Payne's murder investigation.
Amelia spun, skirt flying out around her, one palm raised for a high five.
That's a date. We clapped hands, then parted ways at the next little library.
I went home to work up a menu for my party and list of questions for Payne's ex-wife. All the good questions had to come first, in case she wasn't cooperative and decided to throw me out. Just before sunset, I changed into the outfit I'd worn to paint the inside of my house and stuffed my messy bun into a ball cap. I needed to paint my newly repaired steps, but success was in the timing. Start the job too early and be burnt to a crisp.
Wait too long, and 10,000 nighttime bugs would be dried to the paint before dawn. I moved the brush expertly along the new handrail, rehearsing my questions for the ex-Mrs. Payne and rethinking my desserts for the party. An easy whistle lifted from my lips as I worked. For the first time in a long time, I had abundant purpose and renewed hope as a restaurateur. Even if local kids were daring one another to try my samples.
Chapter 8. Amelia was on my doorstep at 8 a.m. with a cheery smile and two iced coffees.
Ready?
She nearly vibrated with enthusiasm as she passed me a cup. Thanks. The scruffy white cat watched us from the edge of my wide planked porch.
Hi, Maggie, I said to the cat. Would you like some milk before I go?
She arched her back and darted away with a loud hiss and complaint.
That's my cat, I told Amelia. She laughed.
She seems lovely.
I'd put food out for her last night after she'd followed me along the boardwalk. The bowl was empty in the morning, so it was official. I'd claimed her. She just hadn't reciprocated. I stared at the steps and willed my feet to move. But second thoughts had been my morning companion. I knocked wild curls away from my face and squinted indecisively against the balmy ocean wind. Amelia's smile fell.
What's wrong?
I'm about to drive to another town to badger a grieving woman. Is this such a great idea? Maybe we shouldn't go.
No.
She dragged the word out for several syllables, then hooked one hand under my elbow and hauled me toward her car.
I'm driving. You're in pursuit of justice.
I laughed. My mistake. I stopped short of opening the car door, finally noticing Amelia's adorable ensemble.
You look amazing.
I plucked the flowy fabric of my peasant top away from my midsection.
I look like I'm going to hunt seashells.
Amelia's black capris and white sleeveless blouse were classic and sophisticated. She tucked her sleek blonde hair beneath a silk polka-dotted scarf and hung a huge leather hobo bag from her shoulder. I dressed in worn cutoffs and a shapeless top with flip-flops. Her pumps matched her bag, lips and nails. My lips and nails were the color God made them, and my bag was a wallet with a leather strap that hung from my wrist.
I should change, I said, stepping back toward the house.
Amelia wrenched the passenger door open and nearly shoved me inside.
If I could pull off youthful and sporty, believe me, I would. My style has been stuck somewhere between I Love Lucy and librarian chic since middle school. I finally quit fighting it.
I climbed into the passenger side of Amelia's red convertible, wrangling my untamable locks into a ponytail before buckling my seatbelt. Otherwise, my hair would have become the size of an orbiting satellite before the first stoplight.
I didn't know you had a convertible.
Amelia eased the sporty little car onto the road and slowly picked up speed until the tails of her silk scarf whipped behind her like a banner. I bought it last month on a whim. I thought it'd make me feel like a movie star. Does it? She pushed large white frame sunglasses over her bright blue eyes. Sometimes. I'm going to buy a golf cart, I told her. Hopefully it won't make me feel like a retired dentist. I stuck my hand into the whipping wind, enjoying the beat of it against my palm and inhaling that indescribable island scent. Salt and sand, sun and seagrass. Thanks for doing this with me. Glad to, she said. I haven't made spontaneous plans like this in a long time. I bit my tongue against the oxymoron of spontaneous plans. Amelia had always loved lists and order. I'd bucked the concepts for nearly 3 decades. But lately, I was seeing the benefits of having some kind of life plan. I found the perfect place for lunch, Amelia said. And there's an iced tea shop we should probably check out. Duck has an iced tea shop? That was bad news. Sun, sand, and tea was supposed to be one of a kind. I didn't know that. Maybe it's just a cafe that happens to serve sweet tea. It's not in Duck, Amelia corrected. Kitty Hawk. Kitty Hawk, I squawked. That was worse. Kitty Hawk was 10 miles closer. And you want to go there? Personally, I kind of wanted to go home and breathe into a paper bag. I had no idea there was another iced tea shop so close to home. It's good research, she said. You should know your competition and how they compare. I let that thought settle in. Do you know anything about market analysis? I just read about the concept online yesterday. I have a business degree, she smiled. It was a condition of my parents co-signing my first business loan. They wanted to be sure I knew what I was getting into. I paid them back in a hurry, but the student loans are another story. I'll probably die with those. What about you? Is culinary school expensive? I had a scholarship. I rubbed my forehead a little too roughly, annoyed at the reminder of another thing I'd thrown away to follow my heart. The logical move would have been to finish school no matter what, but the sting of Wyatt's rejection had sent me running home to lick my wounds. Now that I was here, I couldn't imagine leaving. Hey, Amelia batted at my shoulder as we slowed for a stop sign. Whatever happened to that cowboy? Remember him? The two of you practically lived on the beach the summer he was here. Amelia glanced over, and the look on my face must have said what I couldn't. Oh, she honked and waved at a carload of men with surfboards tied to the roof. Changing the subject, then. What's the new detective like? Besides tall, dark, and mysterious, and handsome. Those dimples. She sagged into a dreamy sigh. I pulled my lips to one side, unwilling to respond. I'd already given Grady Hayes more of my thoughts than I should have, and I refused to think about the dimples. They distracted me from my mission. Is he nice? She asked. No one seems to know, but you've been seen talking with him a lot. That's because he thinks I'm a murderess, I grumped. A dumb one, too. Why would I kill someone with my tea? Could I pick a more obvious murder weapon? It made me mad every time I thought about it. I couldn't decide what was more offensive, the fact that he thought I would kill an old man or that he thought I was stupid. Who knows why people do the things they do? She shrugged. Besides, he doesn't know you very well yet. For all he knows, you could be crazy. I was getting there. His eyes are pretty, Amelia went on, pale gray, like the moon on the sea. Along with being super smart, Amelia was dramatic. 4 years of high school theater club had clearly left their mark. I shut my eyes to keep them from rolling, but now I was thinking about the infuriating detective again. He told me to stay out of his investigation. Can you believe that? He called it his investigation. Who's more motivated to find the killer than me? It's not like I'm showing up at his office in a trench coat and Columbo hat. I'm doing my own thing and reporting back, completely out of his way. I stretched my neck and shook my hands out at the wrist, trying to release the sudden knots of tension that had appeared.
I didn't like thinking of Detective Hayes's unfair assumptions or 25 to life, so I changed the subject. I did a little research on Mr. Payne's ex-wife last night. Lucinda Payne kept her married name, and she seems like a sweet old lady. Our trip is probably going to be a bust. Aside from the shopping, of course. Shopping is never a bust. Plus, she'll be a wealth of knowledge. They were together for 15 years, according to my dad. He didn't know much about her when I asked, but then again, he avoided Mr. Payne like the plague. Dad hates when people harsh his mellow. He might have had two knee replacements, but he's still a surfer at heart. I'd always liked Amelia's dad, who was a lifetime charm resident. Well, according to the handful of local news articles I could dig up, Lucinda opened her jewelry shop after the divorce. She told the reporter covering her grand opening that she'd always dreamed of owning her own business and that she'd grown up making things with sea glass. So she started designing earrings and the whole thing took off from there. Apparently, it's been fast growing because she's moved her store twice in 7 years, both times to a larger venue. "Consider me jealous," Amelia said. "I couldn't afford a bigger space even if I needed one. I actually met Mr. Payne a couple years ago while I was securing permits for renovations to Charming Reeds. I turned a storage closet into an alcove to add more retail space. He was so fussy. I'm shocked he was ever married." Lucinda's name showed up in the Duck Daily Chronicle a couple times without a photo. A charity chili cook-off at her church and some other nice old lady things. Makes me wonder what Sam had against her. Mr. Waters said she was fancy, but that's hardly a reason for Sam to think she might have hurt her husband. "Sam's pretty uptight," Amelia said. "He probably has something against all of us." "Maybe," I agreed. Only one way to find out about the ex, though. Amelia hooked the next left past a carved wooden sign welcoming us to Duck. "Let's start with her and get it over with. Then we can spend the rest of the day outlet shopping in Nag's Head." "Deal," I smiled. "Thanks again for this." Amelia coasted into a long, narrow parking lot lined with boutiques. "What are friends for?" She parked in the far corner under the shade of a massive kite shop sign. "There, now we won't burn our bottoms on the upholstery when we come back." Lucinda's shop was across the way. Ocean Dreams had a wooden mermaid suspended in the front window, surrounded by bits of floating sea glass. If I had to guess, I'd say there was some clear fishing line involved in the effect, but we were too far away to tell. I stepped out of the car as Amelia swung her feet out the driver's side door and took her shoes off one by one, shaking them upside down. "I can never get all the sand out. That little library bandit has had me coated in it for a week. It's like high school all over again, except I didn't used to mind the sand." "Yeah," I sighed. "That was before we became the ones who have to clean it up." I watched as she dusted the bottoms of her feet with baby powder, then knocked the sand off with an easy swipe of her palm. A handy beach trick. I smiled, glad to spend the day with someone who knew it. "Have you had any luck figuring out who's harassing you?" "No." She slipped her pumps back on and stood. "It could be anyone. Dad could have ticked someone off while he was watching the store for me. Or maybe I did and didn't know it. Sometimes I wonder if my ex would do something so juvenile. Or his new wife. Then I remember they're happy and don't think about me at all." I twisted my mouth in a sympathetic look. "No enemies? Arch rivals? Personal nemesis?" She shook her head sadly. "Usually, people love me. I run the only bookstore in town. I have an open mic night for would-be poets and authors, story time for children, general interest speakers for adults, and the Sassy 60s Book Club meets at my shop every Tuesday. The ladies always bring snacks. I make coffee, Dad covers the register, and he even wears aftershave. Everything was great until this started. Now I wake up in stress hives." "I'm so sorry," I told her. She started across the parking lot, and I followed. "I can't understand who'd want to bully me like this. It's making me crazy. I'm losing sleep over it, and I think I lost a little extra hair in the shower this morning." "Yikes." My heart ached for her. I had no idea the Sand Bandit was getting to you like this. I can see why it would. I just didn't know.
She puffed air into long, side-swept bangs, setting them aflutter.
I'm trying to play it cool, but truthfully, I want to cry every time I think about it. The police have put the situation at the bottom of their priority list, and I can only be in one place at a time, but I have 4 libraries to keep an eye on, plus the store.
She tipped her head back and groaned.
Tell you what, I said. I'll help. We can divide and conquer. I'll take the 2 little libraries on the boardwalk as soon as I get through my grand opening party. With 2 of us on the job, we'll catch whoever is doing this in no time.
Amelia stood outside the door to Ocean Dreams.
You don't have to do that. I didn't mean to make you feel like it was your problem. You've already got a mess of your own to sort out.
I wrapped an arm around her shoulders and dug up my best mobster impression.
Hey, if you've got a problem, then I've got a problem.
She opened the glass door with a wide smile.
Fine, I accept.
I smiled back. I was officially assisting in 2 local crime investigations. Detective Hayes would hate it. Now to confront Lucinda Payne. A blast of cold air from the vent above the door shot goosebumps down my spine. I tried not to think of it as an omen. The store's interior was pale blue, lined in silver shelves and glass cases. I dragged a fingertip across a display filled with jewelry. Amelia stopped at a shelf full of seashell and sand sculptures. Everything was very pretty and smelled like patchouli.
Welcome to Ocean Dreams,
a charming female voice called. Hello, Amelia answered. I turned my eyes from a gorgeous sea glass necklace to the sexagenarian woman in a black pantsuit greeting my friend.
Looking for anything in particular?
The woman asked.
Lucinda was written on her name tag. A gift, perhaps?
Just shopping, Amelia said. We're having a girl's day out.
Oh, where are you from?
I zipped over to Amelia's side. Charm, I answered with a smile. Do you know it?
The woman's smile drooped. Quite well. Excuse me.
She drifted away without further discussion, off to help a man inspecting a delicate-looking glass figurine. Her white hair was gracefully looped into a chignon, and her gait screamed poise and self-importance. I struggled to reconcile the image before me with her goody-two-shoes portrayal in the local paper. I supposed someone could be a bit of a snob and still believe in volunteerism and community outreach. I grabbed a sandcastle paperweight and went after her.
How much is this?
I interrupted her, chastising the man for handling the figurine. She frowned at my rudeness, and the man took the opportunity to escape her scolding.
Sorry, I said. I thought you were finished.
Lucinda crossed her arms.
That sandcastle was handmade. I collected the materials from the beach myself, then sculpted them into what you see there. An authentic product of this island, and I'm asking $170 for it.
Dollars? I asked, mystified.
You just told me you made it from our sand. There's an infinity of that right outside the door. She narrowed her eyes.
Why are you really here?
What?
Do I look like I was born yesterday?
She stomped back toward the counter, and I followed with Amelia on my heels. Lucinda stopped beneath a massive sea glass mosaic on the back wall and turned to us.
You're from Charm, so you know about what happened to my ex-husband. Is that why you're here? You're what? Reporters?
She looked us up and down.
You don't look like cops. Are you the ones who write that blog Benedict was so up in arms about?
Of course not, I protested. Let me explain.
She parked her hands on her hips and tapped her foot.
I ought to call the police. This is harassment.
I pulled my palms up and took a step back.
We knew your ex-husband, and we're very sorry about what happened. That's all.
Lucinda gave us another appraising stare.
How did you know him? I forced a tight smile, prepared to skirt over the details about how Mr. Payne hated me for going against his wishes in opening Sun, Sand, and Tea. We own shops in Charm, and we got to know him through his position on the council. We really are sorry about your loss. Her shoulders relaxed, and the anger drained from her face. Benedict was a good man, she said, a tremor in her voice. He was what a man should be. Confident, steadfast. She pressed her lips into a tight line and her cheeks flushed. I loved him so much. Amelia glanced my way. I stood helpless and frozen.